Welcome to Ask Ally, the self-publishing advice podcast from the Alliance of Independent Authors. This week, it's our monthly member Q&A, where Ally members have their most pressing self-publishing questions analysed and answered. And here are your regular hosts for the member Q&A, David Penny and Debbie Young.
We've got a few things to talk about this evening. The show will last about half an hour or so. Depends how carried away we get or how tired we get. We're going to start with a little bit of news that came up, I think, only today. I had an email from Amazon that came through and said, we are changing the way that Amazon page counts are being calculated. And as Amazon always say, to make it more equitable for all authors. I think Amazon are constantly fighting against people who try to take advantage of the systems they have set up. So at the moment, there is these things called click farms where sweated labor are opening browsers and clicking on pages to read through people's books. And authors are paying these firms to actually do this, because you get paid about, I think in cents terms, it's 0.04 cents per page read. In the UK, it's something like 0.03 pence. And it sounds like a pittance, but to be honest, I earn at least 40% of my income every month from page reads. So last month I had close to 500,000 page reads. Gosh. And if you multiply 500,000 by 0.003 pence or 0.03 pence, it soon mounts up. So it's worth doing. But there's been some conversation on the bulletin boards and Facebook and elsewhere that there's two trains of thought, as there always is with Amazon. One is they are the devil incarnate and they are ripping the world off. And the other is, and this is my view, that they are great. If it wasn't for Amazon, I wouldn't be making any money on my writing whatsoever, and I wouldn't be selling any books because there wouldn't be anywhere to sell them. I think a lot of this change will be to do with trying to reduce things like click farms and so on. So hopefully, this morning before the change took place, I made a note of what my Kindle page counts were, and maybe towards the end of this week, I'm going to go back into my dashboard and just out of interest, have a look at what the page counts are then, to see how they have actually changed, which will be interesting. So that's the big news on Amazon this week, and it's hot off the press because it came out today.
Yes, I had that same email in my inbox as well.
Which is interesting.
Of course, it's that. And it's that time of the month with it just having flipped over onto the 1st of August. You go to look at your figures on KDP and you think, oh my goodness, I haven't sold anything. Oh no, it's first, it's okay.
It is, yeah. I use Book Report. Do you use that at all, Debbie?
I have used it in the past, but to be honest, I haven't looked at it lately because there's just only so many things one can do. And I think it's very easy to spend a lot of time and effort looking at your figures in all different ways and getting anxious about it. And I've actually, let's see if I've got it here, I've resorted to old technology and I've got a little book. Hold on. Oh, I'll find it in a minute. I've got one of these little date book type things, and I've got a little grid where I'm putting my numbers down every day at the same time every day. And it's quite nice because you can see at a glance where you are.
Yeah.
It's quite therapeutic because you think, all right, I've done that, I'm being responsible, I don't have to worry, back to work. And you get on with whatever else you're doing.
Yeah. I always go in and look at my figures every morning, which a friend of mine, Zoe Sharp, who's a quite a big, well-known writer at Indie and Hybrid, says, checking your statistics every day is the road to madness, which it probably is. But because I also spend quite a lot of money on Facebook advertising, I don't want it to run away without me getting a return on it. So I check all of these statistics every day.
Yeah, I think it's important to do that. I mean, I haven't ventured into Facebook advertising, but I've been playing around with Amazon adverts, and it really is essential there to check every day and to turn off keywords that aren't working for you, maybe to change your prices on different ones that are working, and also to put your daily budget up and down as well. And I love it because there's so many things that you can do to tweak it, and you feel, well, not totally in control, but a lot more in control than with Facebook advertising, I think.
Yeah,
Facebook
is the monster. I've noticed lately they've been taking more than my daily budget in some ways.
On Facebook?
Yeah, and they will. If your ad is going well, they say, if your ad is performing well, we will spend more than your daily budget because you are making money on your ads, or they assume you are, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, it's a bit high-handed though, isn't it, when they don't actually give you the choice, because I've noticed with Amazon advertising, they actually send you an email, don't they, saying, oh, you're about to go over your budget, you might like to push it up a little bit, this is what we think you should push it up to. So when they had the Prime Day a little while ago, they were expecting a lot more traffic, and I think I put my budgets up for a couple of days to go through that, but then put them... Mm.
Yeah, it's quite useful for them to do that. And I tell you what is good is that I know that Mark Dawson says Amazon and Facebook are awful because they will take every cent you give them and more. And Amazon are awful because they won't spend the money you want them to spend.
Yes.
So I think Amazon are beginning to get their act together a little bit and fine-tuning this. I noticed that when you spend more on Amazon, then you do see your sales increase the same as you do on Facebook. So it's quite a good, they are quite good. Anyway, we're getting off track a little bit. So we've got three question areas we're going to talk about today. And the first one is ebook pricing. Can you remember who this came in from, Debbie, or is it just a general?
It's coming from a few people, actually. It comes up quite often on the Ally forum, the Facebook forum, that's our members only one. I think it's particularly, it's a particularly anxious moment for new authors who haven't self-published before, because they get to the point where you've put everything else in to publish it, and you get to the point where you've got the prices coming up on the dashboard, and you realise that the buck stops with you for pricing. And although it's wonderful that we can all determine, choose our profit margins within the parameters that Amazon and so forth dictate, we can choose them, but you then also have the responsibility for choosing right, and that's quite a hard thing to do, because one of the common things that comes up quite often is that people say, oh, I've spent so long on this book and all the hours, I can't bear to, particularly on paperbacks where it's harder to make a big margin, people will say, well, I can't bear to only be making £1 a book or something. We had somebody the other day, I won't say who it was because it's confidential information about their own pricing, but they said that they came back and said, but I only made £2.50 or £2.53 per paperback. And this is on a book with a list price of £9.99, retail price of £9.99. And you think, crikey, that's 25%. If you were trade published, you'd probably get 5%. 10% absolute tops, but 5% is the mean. So there's a real middle course to be steered between optimizing your profit and optimizing your sales, because there's no point in having a huge margin if you don't sell any because your book's too expensive.
Yeah. If they're making £2.53 per paperback, it must be about 200 pages or something, I would imagine, not much more.
Yeah, funny enough, I did buy, I was so intrigued with the conversation, I bought a copy of the book because it sounded like a nice book. And I think it's about 250. It's beautifully presented, looks good value for £9.99. And they've sold a lot in a bookshop, their local bookshop as well.
You're talking about people saying, they were not happy with like making £1 a book or something. And one of my bugbears, I must admit, is... I have little sympathy for people who come along and say, I've spent, a year or 2 years or 3 years or 7 years writing this book. I've poured my life into it and I think it's worth £14.99. A book is worth what people are willing to pay for it, not what you think you need to make back for the amount of time you put into it. I'll just run through other outlets, other retail points have different rules. But if I just cover Amazon's and then very briefly mention the others, if you price your book below 99p or 99 cents, you will make 30% of the sale price. So you will get about a little less than 30p or 30 cents per sale on that book.
This is an ebook.
Yeah. All other ebooks, you will make 70% of the sale price. So if you price it at $4.99, you're making about $4 or £4 on that book. The thing to bear in mind is that if you price your book above $9.99 or £9.99, your royalty drops back to 30% again. And that's because Amazon thinks ebooks priced higher than $9.99 are poor value for money, which I would totally agree with. I have some authors who are automatic buys, but I always wait until their books come down to $4.99 or below before I buy them. And sometimes that takes a year, sometimes 18 months, but I simply won't pay. Amazon does have a little tool that will help you calculate a pricing point. But generally, I think for most indies, if you're charging $4.99 in the States, £3.99 in the UK, equivalents in euros, et cetera, that's a reasonable price point for my kinds of books, which tend to go 100,000 words. I like to think that if your books are, some people are doing short novellas and so on, and therefore I would expect to pay less for them then too.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, mine are much shorter. My novels are much shorter than yours, about 60,000 words. And I think I've got them at $1.99 at the moment. But then when I've got more out, because it's a series, I'm going to play around with pricing then. But we'll come back to talk about series pricing.
Yeah, yeah, because that is something you need to bear in mind. And I think it depends on how many books you have in the series and how much you really want to build up your readership and draw them in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, there's other issues, like when you've got so many books, do you do a bundle to
do a discount? Do you do a box set, Dave?
I do. The first three are available, and I think it's about 25, 30% cheaper than buying them individually. And my box set is actually 69,000 in Amazon, which is not bad, really. Consider I sell about 1 to 3 copies a day.
Oh, right, okay.
So, yeah, and it gets reviews as well, yeah, which is great.
Yeah, because I always wonder about that, because if you have reviews on the books individually, they don't get applied to the box set, do they? It's separate sets of reviews. So that's another thing to consider if you're thinking whether to do a box set.
I'm not sure if the box set, I don't think the box sets and the series are actually linked, because the box set is outside of the series on my Amazon page.
Right. And
so as far as Amazon's concerned, they're completely different products. So there's no linkage there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's ebook pricing, and there's also print book pricing that is another black eye.
Yes. Yeah. And that's really tricky, because whereas with Amazon, when you're setting your own prices, it's pretty clear cut that the price you set is the price that applies until you decide to change it, both on KDP and on CreateSpace. Although they do, for reasons best known to themselves, and I'm sure they've got an algorithm for it, because they've got an algorithm for all eventualities, they will sometimes reduce your price without telling you. It always surprises me that they don't tell you, because it's nice to promote it to people when you know you've got a lower price. Because when Amazon reduces a price, you still get the full royalty that you would get. So, for example, at the moment, and for the last couple of months, they've been, my Best Murder in Show, the first novel in my mystery series, is priced at £7.99, I think $9.99, and they've knocked £1 off for the last 2 months for no apparent reason, but I still get the same royalty that I would get if it was at full price. But it's also for sale through Ingram Spark, so bookstores can order it, and I've set the price there at $7.99, $9.99, and I don't have control all I have control over is setting the discount in the Ingram pricing grid, because you have quite a lot of leeway about what discount you set. But what a lot of people don't understand is that when bookstores order in your books, they don't buy it direct from Ingram in most cases, unless they're using this new system that Ingram have just brought out called iPay, which enables them to order directly. But that's not universal yet, but it's spreading. Bookstores buy from wholesalers or distributors who also take a cut of that discount. So if you're you've put 40% as your discount, and it has to range between about 35% and 55%, depending on the country. There are different criteria in each territory. If you put 40%, it doesn't mean that the bookseller who sells it in his shop necessarily gets 40%. The middleman will also, quite reasonably, because they're providing the service, they will take their cut as well. So the bookseller might get 25-30%. One of the reasons that we wrote the bookstore, our new Ally guidebook about how to get your self-published books into bookstores, is to explain the complexities of that system. Because once you know that's how it works, and knowledge is power, and you can then rejig your prices accordingly. And so if people haven't already read that book, downloaded it. If you're an Ally member, you can download it free of charge. That's how to get your self-published book into bookstores. But it's also available as an ebook at the moment. A paperback will be out around September time. We'll have a paperback.
I must admit, I'm very lazy when it comes to print. I have this little saying, which is stolen from business, that ebooks are sanity and print is vanity. as authors, we love to hold, you know, I love to hold a copy of my book because it, you know, yeah, just feels nice to flick through it.
Let's all have a little bit of hard
physical, physical product, yes, yeah. Tuck it up under the pillow and stroke it once or twice in the night. But I will sell maybe 1 to 4 print books a day. And I'm selling close to 100 ebooks, so that, you know, that's the kind of, you know, it's about 3-4% of what you would sell an ebook of. So it is very difficult, and part of that is pricing. Part of that is, as indies, we don't have access to bookshops in the way that traditional publishers will have.
No, it's hard because the way that traditional publishers work is that they have their books are all represented. You have a rep going around from a publisher or distributor who's selling in 100, 200 books in every visit to a bookshop. They've got the scale of economy that enables them to do that cost effectively. We can't, you know, you have to think twice as whether it's going to be viable for you just to take your book to your local bookshop, never mind try and reach every other bookshop there is. So it is, you do have to think long and hard. But if you have a good relationship with your local bookshop and also with other organisations such as festivals, or you know, if you go to festivals, writing events, or if you give talks at your local libraries or to local community groups or whatever, you really, really do need the print book. And also there's an awful lot of people who don't believe that you are an author until you can show them the physical book. It's mad, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, people say, I've gone to my local Waterstones and they don't stock your book. And I say, have you asked them for it? And they said, no. And I said, well, ask them for it and they will get it in, which they generally do. So, but you will not walk into Waterstones and find my books or your books on the shelves alongside, you know, big name people like Ian Rankin or whoever. Mm. They are very much a minority thing in those big bookstores. But hopefully some of that will change, but we'll have to see how that goes. One of the other questions we had, which was kind of to do with pricing and not, is series pricing. So if you have a series and you're writing a series, I have a series, not everybody does so, but how should you price primarily, I think, the first book in your series? And some people would argue to make the first book in your series free as a loss leader to draw people in. I'm not of that mind, but Even so, I price my, the first book in the series is $1.99 and the others are £2.99. So they're a pound more. There's not a huge jump in price. Mm. And it's similar, I think the dollars are $2.99 and $3.99. But that initial book, I think, once you have, and you're about to start to go into this situation, Debbie, once you have three books or more, I think it's a strategy you can pursue. Initially, when I had one book, it was, I think, $3.99. But once I got a second one, I reduced the price of the first, and that has even more effect as you get the second, the third, the fourth, and fifth, and sixth, and so on as you go through. That it people need an enticement to buy into a series. And if you've written a series well enough, and if you've written that first book well enough, and I wish I'd written my first book better than I did, because I'd like to go back now and redo it, but I'm not going to do that because it's a total waste of time. Then people will go on to read the subsequent ones, and you will find the set. You know, I have some people who are absolutely rabid fans, and they just sit there and they email me and they Facebook me and they say, "Come on, get on! I need the fifth book. It's not out yet, and I've read all the others, and I can't wait for the next one." And you say, "Well, it'll be next year." And you say, "That's too long." And I said, "Well, do you want it right or do you want it now?"
That's a good line, yeah.
Yes, yeah. It comes from when I used to write software.
Yeah.
Do you want it with bugs or do you want it's finished?
I think the price.
Sorry, yeah, I was going to ask for your take on that in terms of series pricing, Debbie.
I think it depends how closely together you're publishing them as well, because that's another question that we had from a chap called Mike Stone, who we'll come back to in a minute. Because if you're publishing them slowly and steadily, you can play around with the prices as you go along. I mean, my first two, the second one in the series, Trick or Murder, will be published on the 21st of August. And at the moment, I've got that set up on the pre-order to be the same price as Best Murder in Show. But once I've got three or four out, then I'll probably reduce Best Murder in Show to $1.99, maybe, and have the subsequent ones a little bit more expensive, because by the people who are going on to buy books 3, 4, 5, 6, they are the ones who are really serious, and they would pay more for it. You know, as you say, there are people who stop you in the street and say, "Well, come on, what are you doing? Why are you out here? You should be at home writing the next book." I'm trying to, one of the reasons that I'm now writing the third book as well. So from beginning of April to beginning of beginning of November, I'll have then, God willing, published the first three books in the series in that short space of time, is so that I can then start playing around with the prices and do some price promotions. And I don't know about a box set, but certainly have the first one cheaper and play around there. Whereas if I had taken other advice to hold back and publish all three at once, then although you have a big splash because you've got three books hitting the sales figures all at once, I don't think I would have the same flexibility. I mean, what would you do with prices if you were publishing three in a series all at once?
I think I'd have the first one cheaper to draw people in. It's a bit dispiriting, because you won't have found this out yet, but I suspect every author who writes series discovers that you sell more of your first book than you do the others. So you don't please all of the people with that first book, and you will lose readers along the way. But once you've lost, I think about 60% of the people who... So I lose about 40% of the readers between book one and book two. But they then, once they get to book two, they will buy book three and book four, and hopefully book all the way up to 8, 9, and 10.
Because with the subsequent books after the first one, you're not having to sell the concept anymore, are you? The ones who've read the first one know what the concept is, and they either like it or they don't. And people who write standalone books, who don't write series at all, even if they're writing books that are in the same genre, very similar in style and feel and mood and everything, it's much harder for them to sell the same number of books that aren't in a series. I'm really sold on the idea of series writing.
A lot of people don't write series. A lot of people don't actually like the concept of writing series. It's alien to the way they write. But I've written standalones when I used to write years and years and years ago. It was always standalones and not series. Although coming back to my four published novels now, I realize they are actually a series. But I didn't realize it at the time.
That's because you can have a series. I've had people say to me, "But I can't write series. I don't write series." And one of the authors was Claire Flynn, who's a wonderful historical novelist. And she said, "Oh, I don't write series." I said, "Well, actually, look at your books. You could brand them as a series because they're all about women in different times in history going emigrating and starting new lives. And actually, you know, you could turn that into a series if you get the mindset into the mindset series, and if you want to." And I'm sure there are lots of people who are writing lots of, say, standalone sci-fis or literary fiction or whatever, who is kind of window dressing. It's almost cosmetic. You can turn them into a series by giving them all the same strap line or giving them all the same cover branding. I mean, there's Jessica Bell, who's writing books across all different kinds of genre, including poetry and different kinds of novels and novellas, and she's actually given them the same physical branding on the cover.
Yes, I saw those.
Even though they're completely different, which is quite an interest. I haven't seen many people do that, but that's an interesting thing. Yeah. Branding is a state of mind, series of state of mind in a way, I think.
I think what people have to accept is that we are our own brand, that what we're selling as a brand is yourself as the author. And if people like one of your books, they will probably like others. But I mean, to me, I might disagree a little bit with that. To me, a series has a continuity of characters in them. I buy into a series for the characters in the series rather than any slightly more nebulous connection between them. But you're right in that you can brand yourself so people like our writer's work.
Yeah, so they're getting the same
voice. And they will get the same voice and the same treatment as some of the others. So yes, it is possible to do that.
Should we come back to Mike? Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, should we move on to Mike Stone's question? Because I think I'm conscious that we're running out of time. Yeah. Mike Stone wrote to say he's writing three books, very much a series, and they're about dogs in politics. There's a dog that becomes prime minister. They're quite fun. And he's
well, Churchill. He's a dog, isn't he?
For viewers who aren't in the UK, we ought to explain there is a certain brand of insurance which uses a dog called Churchill. Anyway, Mike Stone has written these three books about dogs in politics. They're nearing completion, and he is in a quandary because he doesn't know whether he should save up and do all three at once or whether to publish them one at a time. Now, I think you said to me, in fact, when I started writing my Sophie Sayers series, do publish the first three all at once. Now, I'm too impatient to hang on and do that because I'd like a bit of instant gratification. You know, and I was so desperate to test out the first one to see if people liked it, which fortunately I did, which is why I'm now writing the third one. And even though I've only got a 6-month spread across the three books that I'm writing them, it would have taken a lot of willpower to hold back. Mike clearly has more willpower than I do, Mike Stone. What would your advice be to him, David?
Because I did say to you should launch all three at once, didn't I?
You did, yes, you did. Yeah. I think Orna said to me as well, I'm just completely disobedient and impatient.
I know, I would be as well. I couldn't hold back. You know, I'm only doing a book a year, so I wouldn't wait 3 years to launch three together. In Mike's situation, it's obviously very different. I think, as you were talking about it then, I think I might recommend some sort of middle ground. But as we were saying before, people will buy into your first in the book, and if they like it, first in the series, if they like it, they will buy the second and the third and subsequent books. It might be worth thinking of publishing the first, and then a fortnight later, publishing the second, and then a fortnight after that, publishing the third, so that you can stagger your releases, so you get a bit of a buzz going over a longer period of time, rather than saying, "Oh, look, I've got three books, buy them all at once." you could lead into the subsequent books. You could put them on pre-order so that if people like the first one, even if it's only a couple of weeks. Pre-orders we ought to come back to because I absolutely love pre-orders.
Yeah, you got me hooked on pre-orders as well. But just to finish with Mike then, Mike, I know you listened to our last podcast, so presuming you're listening to this one as well, take your choice out of the advice that's given there, take your pick, and do let us know how you get on, but don't blame us if it all goes horribly wrong.
We're like lawyers, we are not lawyers, this is not legally binding, this is just what we think, and what we think is what we make up. We have no validity whatsoever, other than we have been doing it for more years than I care to think about. I've been doing this for 3/4 of my life, so that's way too long. Yeah. And I learn something every day, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
I think a day when you don't learn something new, or you don't learn some new element of craft, is a day wasted, really. That we should all be hungry for learning more things.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all should be wanting to be the best we can be and better. And I mean, you're saying, you know, you wish you could rewrite your first book in your current series. And I've been thinking the same about mine. You know, I learn a little bit each more with each one. But in fact, that's how it should be. Because if the first one was better than the subsequent ones, then you're doing something wrong.
And the other
lesson, you've been running a series too long, that can happen.
It is, yeah. The other lesson to learn from that is that at some point you have to let the baby out into the big wide world and move on, even if you think you can make it better. You and I have both come across people who are 10 or 15 years into writing their first book.
Yeah.
And it's still not perfect, so they're not going to do anything with it. But I think sometimes you do have to move on because you have learned lessons. And if you start with a clean slate for the second book, then it makes it easier than just going back and rewriting that first one. Yeah. So it comes up to scratch. Good.
And I think you change as a person as well in that time. And, you know, I'm writing different books to what I would have written 15 years ago. I think sometimes if people should ask themselves, if they've been writing a book too long, are they just finding excuses not to send it out into the world?
Yeah, there's sometimes this fear of judgment that prevents people from
putting it out. Fear of success as much as fear of failure, you know, it could be either.
Okay, so we've actually done better. Is there something else, Debbie? Sorry.
We did say we'd just come back and talk about pre-orders.
Oh, yeah.
If we just want to clarify for anyone who doesn't know how pre-orders work.
On Amazon, you can put a pre-order up 3 months in advance of publication date. On iTunes, you can put it up a year in advance. And most, and I had I did a podcast with Mark, what's his name from Smash Groups? That's terrible, not remembering his name. Mark Coker, who said, always put your book up for pre-order as long as you can. He likes the idea of 1 year pre-orders. So I always use the full. I always use the full 3 months now, and it's interesting how the momentum builds for it. But some people like pre-orders, some people don't. From my own personal viewpoint, I think they're a great idea. That you are encouraging people to buy into your series in advance, and you are building up a buzz so that on launch day your book gains on Amazon it gains a ranking for each pre-order you get. On Apple, all of your pre-orders contribute to your rank on the day of launch. So you could suddenly bounce from nothing to like number 3 in Amazon on something like 1,000 pre-orders, which is not beyond the realms of possibility.
Yeah.
So,
and you had 700 for your last one, didn't you?
I think I did. First pre-order I did was for book 3, and it had 72 pre-orders. The fourth book in the series I put on pre-order, and it had just over 800 pre-orders. So part of that is building up the series brand. And part of it is just being consistent. That's something that you have to remember when you're starting out in particular. Consistency is vastly underrated. And it's what readers are looking for. You know, it's why Lee Child sells a book every 5 seconds. which is a scary thought. And he does it through whether you like his books or not. And I know there are millions and millions of people who think he's a terrible writer. He is if nothing if not consistent. So you buy a Lee Child book, you know exactly what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Big man beats bad people up. The end. Unless you watch the movies. I think pre-orders are a good idea. Some of these questions that we've discussed tonight, Deb, we almost need a half-hour slot on their own, because there's a lot of stuff we're skimming over here.
Yeah, and we've got, people shouldn't forget also that we've got loads of blog posts. We've got over 1,500 blog posts in our archive on the Author Advice Centre. That's www.selfpublishingadvice.org. And there is, of course, a handy search box in there. So if there's any particular topic that you want to look up, for example, pre-orders, punch the keyword in the search box and it will give you however many about that particular topic. And that's a really, really good way of getting a quick head start on the different topics. We've also got the series of publications which are free to download for members to download. So if they're free, why wouldn't you? And they're all going to be, hopefully later this year, they will all be available in paperback as well. So not already, if you're watching this and you're not already a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors, it's certainly worth joining. Well, there's 21 different reasons we've got listed to join Ally, but one of the great reasons is that we have a private members-only forum on Facebook where you can go online any time of day or night, ask your question there, and there's, I think we've got about 1,200 active members of that forum at the moment. Out of the many more thousands of membership we've got, those are the ones who choose to go on the Facebook forum. But it means, and they're all over the world, so whatever time you go on there, you will get answers to the questions that you put on pretty promptly from a range, or not just one answer. You'll get lots of feedback from lots of people who sort of been there, done that before you. And David and I are on there a lot as well, as is Una and other lots of people.
Great. Thank you, Debbie. So you will see Debbie and I again on the 5th of September, which happens to be my birthday, so cake.
Well, really, it's my dad's birthday as well.
So
all the best people's birthdays. He'll be 86, though, so he'll be a bit older than you.
Not much older, unfortunately. I've got a lot of books to write between now and then. So we'll be back with our next question and answer session on the 5th of September, 5 weeks today. And if anybody's going off on holiday or lazing on the beach, have a great time. And we will see you 5 weeks from now.
Yes, bye-bye. Have a lovely holiday. And we'll look forward to hearing your questions. Do please keep sending them in. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Ask Ally Members Q&A with Alliance of Independent Authors Technical Manager David Penny and Publications Manager Debbie Young, in which our members' most pressing self-publishing questions are answered. Our weekly self-publishing advice broadcast is brought to you by Ally, the Alliance of Independent Authors. This beginner's salon is one of four regular shows, which include a beginner's and advanced self-publishing salon and a special guest highlight presentation from the Indie Author Fringe, Ally's free online author conference. Find more author advice, tips, and tools at our Self-Publishing Advice Centre, selfpublishingadvice.org. And if you haven't already, we invite you to join our organisation and become a self-publishing ally. You can do that at AllianceIndependentAuthors.org. Now, go write and publish.